Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullist, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. You get three brand new interviews sent your way every single week. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones at Spotify, Apple Podcast, and NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the series a review and a rating if you feel so inspired. That always helps out so much. We've had some great guests on lately. The English Beat, Dave Wakeling was here. Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. Beth Ditto of Gossip. Actor Skeet Ulrich from Scream. Maggie Lindemann. Guy Garvey of Elbow. Comedian Martin Amini. Actors Nathan Stewart Jarrett. George McKay. Rudy Mancuso. And Hamish Linklater. And Gary Clark Jr. Was here as well, getting started in April. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, special episode. Today is what we call a rewind. We're digging some interviews out of the vault. Now, here's the funny thing. So my guest today is Mike McCready of Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam's album, Dark Matter, was just released, so it's sort of with that in mind. But I had this interview with Mike that I reposted recently, and it was back from 2012, and we were talking about UFO, the band UFO, and his tribute act that he does to UFO called Flight to Mars, which benefits a lot of things, including raising awareness for Crohn's disease, Crohn's colitis, which Mike has had through the years. We got to talk about that. We talk about his side project, The Rockfords, Pearl Jam's radio show they used to do back in the 90s, Monkey Wrench Radio, sharing Matt Cameron with Pearl Jam. And when we did this interview, they were still working on what would eventually become Lightning Bolt. Now, one of the biggest things that came out of this interview was that Mike had mentioned that 2 days prior to us talking, they had decided to do an anniversary edition of the Mad Season album Above. Now, if you remember Mad Season, this was the band that he started with Lane Staley of Alice in Chains, as well as Barrett Martin of Screaming Trees. John Baker Saunders was on there. Mark Lanegan made some appearances. and Mike dropped the news on me that they had recorded a second album, 13 songs, but with no vocals, that Lane didn't come back. So there was no vocals on it, and they were going to be looking for vocalists. And that would eventually happen. But that's where our interview more or less ended. And I put that interview back out because not only was I thinking about Pearl Jam's new album on the way, but it was also Mike McCready's birthday when I released it. And then I just went along my merrily way. And I was looking through files a few days later, and lo and behold, there's two files with Mike's name on it. And it dawned on me that I had completely forgot that we talked a second time just a year later. This is a very dumb and privileged moment in my career where I've interviewed so many people so many times that it just didn't dawn on me that we had done a second interview and that I had never done anything with that interview on the internet since I had originally broadcast it on WFPK. So I want to include both of those here. Now, about that second interview, it happened in 2013. Mike tells us that they recorded three of those 13 songs with Mark Lanegan. Those would come out on that deluxe edition of Above. Two songs with Killing Joke's Jazz Coleman. Those two songs would go on to become Levy Walkers that he put out with Duff McKagan as well a part of that. And that, of course, my math, that means there's still a lot of those songs that have never been released, to my knowledge, unless they were just other projects that he's put out there. I'm going to have to ask him about that one day. So we get to talking in this interview about the dark period of Mad Season. McCready was coming out of his own addictions and getting clean. He sort of starts the band with the best intentions of helping Lane get clean. Of course, he would pass away a few years later, succumbing to his own addictions. And then there's a moment in the interview where I point out that Mike has played with nearly all of the famous Seattle singers. Lane Staley, of course, Eddie Vedder in Pearl Jam, Chris Cornell in Temple of the Dog, and Mark Lanegan of Screaming Trees within Mad Season. And I joke, all he was missing was Kurt Cobain. Well, apparently he tried to do that once as well. I'm not going to ruin it. You're going to have to listen to it. But he tried in this brief moment to start a band with Kurt Cobain. What could have been if that had ever taken shape? So let's do this. You're going to get two interviews, one from 2012, one from 2013. Let's start with the first one from 2012. It's Kyle Meredith with Mike McCready. Kyle Meredith talking with Mike McCready, famous of many things, Pearl Jam being one of them. But right now you're actually getting prepared for a bit of something different, and that is Flight to Mars. Is that right?
Yes. We do a tour, a show every year, and my band is called Flight to Mars. We're a UFO tribute band, which is a kind of obscure band in the 80s. And the money that we raise for it is it's twofold, if you want me to explain that now.
Sure.
It's for advocacy for patients, with a woman named Jennifer Jaffe. And she's a lawyer that helps people with chronic illnesses to know their rights in the insurance industry. Super important. And also, and the bigger one, is to send kids that have Crohn's or colitis to camps up and down the West Coast called Camp Oasis, to raise money for that, too.
Yeah. And you've been doing this now for 10 years, is that right?
This is our 10th anniversary, yes, I have. We've only done one show per year in Seattle and to send kids from the Northwest to that, to a camp up here. But so we're taking it on the road this year kind of spread the word and the love and everything.
Yeah, and spread the education about UFO.
Exactly. get people back on the UFO train, which was back in the 70s and the early 80s.
Yeah. Was this a band you were into back then, too?
Yeah, this is a band that I loved as a kid growing up. Stone, our other guitar player, and I used to love this band. We traded pictures of the guitar player Michael Schenker. We were just so nerded out on how great this band was. And they had one seminal record called Strangers in the Night, and then they kind of fell apart after that. But it's just as musicians go, it's very, for guitar players, it's very much of a high watermark for guitar players to listen to Michael Schenker play, and he was the lead guitar player.
Yeah.
So, and great vocals by Phil Maugg, and just one of my favorite bands that never kind of really made it, you know, as big as they should have, I think, but yeah. Love them anyways.
You guys have always had kind of a history of educating people on bands that, you know, a lot of people haven't heard of, so.
Right. Well, that's kind of fun. I mean, it's we're all guys that love to go to, you know, vinyl, have vinyl records, and, you know, go to record conventions and do all that stuff and see as many bands as we can. So we try to, you know, take those kind of bands on the road with us if we can.
There were some UFO guys that ended up in other bands afterward, right? Like Scorpions, and did I read somewhere like Great White or something like that?
I'm not sure what the Great White thing could have been, but Michael Schenker, his brother was actually Rudolf Schenker, who was in the Scorpions. So he Schenker himself was in UFO when he was 16 years, in the Scorpions when he was 16 years old. Uh-huh. And then he left and was in UFO, and then he came back and played on a couple Scorpions records. So he wasn't technically in them, although he was originally.
Yeah. And I might guess that a lot of these bands would have had an influence on the early Shadow days as well.
For sure, yeah. I mean, in terms of bands that we loved as Shadow, there were local bands. There was one called TKO we really loved. But, you know, the ones we would trade tapes to and listen to would be, you know, UFO or Kiss or Van Halen or Aerosmith, you know, all the stuff that we were growing up with and grew to love. Motorhead, stuff like that.
Right. So now that you get to be in this tribute band, it seems like this is the perfect excuse to never actually have to grow up entirely.
Yeah, so. Exactly. It kind of is. It feels like that, Kyle. It kind of feels like I can go into this space of where I'm going to play a certain way is how I wanted to be able to play when I was 16, and
right.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
Now I kind of can, so it's fun to be able to play in as close as I can to Michael Schenker. It takes two of us, Tim DiGiulio, who's the other guitar player, and myself to be only half as good as Schenker was.
Wow. That's saying something right there.
Yeah.
I was going to actually ask something that kind of hits on that right there. So you get to go out on this tribute band, and you're taking it out on the road. Do you find yourself that you're wanting to embody a character, or is it still just, you know, Mike McCready plays awesome guitar on stage to other people's songs?
I think I kind of take on the character of him a little bit in terms of I'm using Flying V guitars like he did.
Mm-hmm.
So I will, and that's all I'm using pretty much that on the night during the UFO set. So that's kind of my homage to him, I guess, I hate to use that word, but I will use it. And then I just kind of play how I play. You know, I play a little bit different than I do in Pearl Jam. I play a little more kind of metal and just a little harder at times. And I try to do my best I play the parts as best as I can. There's some stuff I can't even figure out that Schenker did. So, you know, I just have to kind of fake it, you know.
I think that really is saying something. I mean, a lot of us hold you in high regards as a pretty amazing guitarist. So hearing that
thank you.
There's even someone else out there that's besting you.
Oh, there's a lot out there that are besting me, I'm telling you. There really are. I feel very grateful that I'm in a position where I can play in a band that can get to go out and play to a lot of people, and people seem to enjoy, you know, my leads and stuff like that. So I feel very honored by that. And there are many others that are better, for sure, though.
And we'll be right back right after this.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Mike McCready. Well, this has shed a lot of light on Crohn's disease, as you have as well.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of an easy tie-in right from the beginning? Were you looking for an outlet to say, yeah, we need to do something with this, and it kind of matched up? I mean, how does it all kind of tie together?
Kyle, it was a long journey. I got Crohn's when I was 21 years old. I was down with Shadow, as you were saying, in Los Angeles, California in 1986. And I got, you know, I got an attack of it there, and I didn't really know what it was. And then it kept going, and there was blood and mucus and pain and all sorts of stuff that happens along with it. And I was 21 years old, I finally went to the doctor, and he said, well, it looks like you have ulcerative colitis, and then it turns into Crohn's colitis, you know, a few years down the line from what they've diagnosed. And so I had it for a long time. And then when Pearl Jam started, I kind of kept it quiet because I was super ashamed of it and embarrassed. And it's a very isolating disease in terms of you never know when you have to use the bathroom, and it really hurts a lot, and it can be a big mess.
Right.
And it's happened to me a whole bunch, you know, on tour, on stage, driving around Seattle, anywhere. You know, I've always had to know where kind of a bathroom is, and it's really a nightmare. So I was very kind of brought down by it and ashamed, I have to say, for many years, until my wife Ashley kind of said, look, I'm tired of you complaining about this. You should reach out and talk, come out and talk about this and try to meet other people that have this and try to work on some sort of solution. So 10 years ago, I did that. Mm-hmm. And that's when the weight was lifted and the solution started coming my way.
Yeah. Are you
and
still,
getting to meet people that other people that had it. I didn't really know anybody that had it than me.
Are you still dealing with it today as bad as you were in the past?
Not as bad as I was in the past. Luckily, I'm on this drug called Humira, which it works very well. I'm trying to, you know, be as good as I can on my diet. And the interesting thing with Crohn's or colitis patients, what one person can eat, the other person can't eat, but we have the same symptoms. So for me, I have to stay away from salads and tomatoes and things like that. And fried foods. And so I try to, you know, to my best, have the best diet that I can. And I am feeling very well right now. So,
yeah, well, I'm luckily. Glad to hear it.
And, but you never know. That's the thing. You never know what's going to happen.
Once again, it is nice actually for you to shed light on that, because a lot of people probably wouldn't have stepped out on that. You know, that's not something that's that is easy to talk about. So
it's super embarrassing. I'm in a band and a high profile band, and you know, people that have to drive to work every day that, you know, maybe get caught in traffic, that's equally as bad, you know, that they can't get to a bathroom immediately, but they have to keep living their lives. Or kids that are in school, that's that really, you know, how hard it is as a teenager to be in school and to be mocked and all those kind of things. And on top of that, have this horrible disease and have to use the bathroom all the time and teachers don't understand. So there's a lot going on.
And it all ties back around now to Flight to Mars.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is an interesting little way to say it.
Good segue.
This isn't even your first side project. I was actually kind of curious of any of the other ones you were doing. Will we ever see from again, like the Rockfords? Is there ever going to be any more Rockfords?
The Rockfords, we may do something. Carrie Aucrey, the singer, dear friend of mine, has moved to Minneapolis with her family, and she has a job there. So I believe she'll be busy there for a little while. Four-fifths of the Rockfords were Shadow, so we just did some shows down in Costa Rica with my friend Duff McKagan with his band Loaded. So that was fun. That was another side thing. We're looking into re-releasing some Mad Seasons music that I did with Lane Staley before he died and John Baker Saunders. It was a side project I did in Lane was from Alice in Chains, and it was a side project I did in 1995. We're going to re-release that hopefully by the end of the year and put a live concert out. And also, we have 13 unreleased songs we never did, and I'm hoping that we're going to get some singers to sing on the top of that.
You made my head explode just a little bit on that one right there.
Oh, sorry. Hopefully in a good way.
No, that was such an amazing record, and to know that there's even leftover stuff out there, that's exciting. So
yeah, the thing that happened was we were trying to do another record, and it just didn't work. Lane went off and did Alice in Chains, and then he died. So what happened was I had to change the name to a band called Disinformation. So from the Disinformation sessions, there are probably 12 songs, you know, and out of that, probably 8 that are pretty great. So that need to be edited, but they're all music. So we're trying to find singers to do, you know, that are up to the caliber of Lane to do justice to it.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of them, but it's just getting the commitment, and this is just has happened as of like 2 days ago. So there's I probably shouldn't be talking about this early, but it doesn't matter because it's going to happen towards the end of the year. We're trying to get all our ducks in the row. You know, we're trying to get the rights back from Sony, all these things. So.
Sure. Well, we'll be looking to see if it actually comes to. I know the process can take a long time. So
it can, but I think there's some cool stuff, and people will be excited when it happens. We're going to make it really nice for people.
You want to give us the update on Star Anna? You've been championing Star Anna. We played her quite a bit here at WFPK.
Yes, thank you for bringing her up. Star Anna is my favorite new singer-songwriter out of Seattle, from Ellensburg, which is outside of Seattle. She has just finished a new record, which I think is very great, and I didn't have anything to do with it. They just did their own thing, and so I don't have my nepotism like I played on. Actually, I did play on one song, but it's a really cool record done with Johnny Sangster, who's a local producer here in Seattle, a different sound from them. I am going to play with her tomorrow night for Record Store Day. We released a single that's coming out tomorrow called Keep On that she sings on, and then the B-side is called Call Your Girlfriend, which is a Robin song, but she does a that techno pop kind of hit, and she does a very quiet beautiful, sad rendering of that song. And then the Keep On song, it's already on. I think you can download it. We put it out, but the vinyl's coming out tomorrow for Record Store Day, mm-hmm. and I'm going to sit in with Star tomorrow for a couple of songs. So hopefully, you know, this is her year. I don't know. You never know with this. I just love listening to her sing.
So. Yeah. Well, Wolves in Disguise was such a big song over here. Love that one. So.
Oh, cool. Great.
Be excited to hear more from that. Yeah.
Cool. I think you'll enjoy the new direction. It's different than that. So. Well,
definitely. No, I mean, it is all about her voice, though, at the beginning. I mean, she has some power there, so.
Some power and some soul and some mm-hmm. sadness. And, I mean, I've seen, like, 800 people go, what? You know, she played at a Hootenanny one time, and I was out in the audience, and it was our Hootenanny that we were playing, and I just happened to go watch her from the audience, and the whole audience was just like, you know, what did I just see? And she just did it. That's How Strong My Love Is by Otis Redding.
Right.
And just blew the. She stole the whole thing. It was amazing.
It is Public Radio Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Which I know you guys have been doing a little bit with. In fact, I mean, Pearl Jam has a huge history with radio. You had your own pirate radio stations for a little bit there with the Monkey Wrench Radio.
Yeah, that was an interesting time. That was in, you know, 95 era, 90, in the mid-90s. And Ed was traveling. It was interesting. It was almost a point of contention towards the end of it because we were traveling in a plane and he was in a van doing a radio show right after it, mm-hmm. Right after the show. So. It was very much of an interesting time. It was really cool he was doing that, but he was also getting super tired, and none of the band was really talking around at that time. So there was kind of like a strange disconnect that went along when that was going on, and we had to sit down and have a couple of meetings. Like, you know, how are we going to continue to be a band? Do we want to be a band? Do you want to be with us, Ed? You know. It was an interesting time. So it was twofold. It was cool that he was doing the radio show from after every show, but it was also kind of exhausting him, too,
yeah.
at the same time.
Well, hopefully not.
And we just, speaking of Star Anna, we did two of those songs for KEXP 90.3 here mm-hmm. in Seattle mm-hmm. last 2 weeks ago with Star. So yeah. we do support it.
Well, that is a great tie in there. KEXP is a great public station.
Yeah.
Obviously, hopefully not every experience you've had with radio has been like the end of the Monkey Wrench Radio there. But
I don't want to denigrate it. I'm just trying to tell you the psychology
sure,
behind
sure,
what was
sure.
going on. But I thought it was fantastic because we did a few things in Seattle that were fantastic through Monkey Wrench, which will have some Mad Season music from that mm-hmm. that happened. Mm-hmm. We did one show out of Seattle that was really fantastic. It was Mad Season and Us and Mudhoney, and I can't remember who else played. Soundgarden might have played a tune, but there was a really good sense of community happening when that was going on. So I am very proud of that too.
That's a good bootleg. I've got that one.
Oh, okay, you got it right. I can't remember who else was there. It was.
I'd have to look back too, and there was a lot of them through there.
Yeah, Fastbacks were there too. So.
Yeah. Well, actually, so with it being Public Radio Awareness Month, is there any stations like that you could talk about, like KEXP, and what public radio maybe has meant to you guys? Because it does really fit you guys' mantra and mentality of Pearl Jam.
Yeah. Well, I like, you know, I like NPR, I like KEXP. I like to listen to. I listen to all sorts of stuff, but I like stuff that's kind of. You know, run by the people, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, where you can donate and support, and then they kind of don't follow, you know, the formats that are dictated through regular radio, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of playing new bands, you've got good DJs here and that play stuff in Seattle that I've never heard before, and it turns me on to new stuff because I get stuck in a rut and listen to old stuff all the time from the 70s and 80s. So if you don't have to really follow a format or you create your own format, that's kind of freeing to listen to that. Mm-hmm. If it's a blues night, you know, they'll do that, and that's kind of neat, and I get to hear some stuff I never hear. You don't ever get to hear blues on the radio. So I do enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear it. And like I said, Pearl Jam has seemed to have found a great home on public radio throughout the years, too.
Very lucky for that. I mean, I'm glad that it's embraced us, you know.
Yeah. It seems like even through, you know, a few of the years on a few of the records that, you know, commercial radio didn't take a chance on, we were still around to play it.
Sure.
So
yeah, there's definitely been times like, you know, our No Code records or Binaural or, mm-hmm. you know, certainly that people didn't gravitate towards it or the radio stations didn't throw it in their playlist or, you know, the regular ones. And, you know, we have no control over that. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're grateful that someone was playing it,
yeah.
you know, that you guys were doing it.
Well, if you've got another moment, could we get actually a little bit of a Pearl Jam update while we're here?
Sure.
You guys have been working on a new record a little bit here and there?
We are here and there working on a little teeny bit of a record. We've got some demos we've been working. We're again with Brendan O'Brien, who's kind of our captain and leading us in our leading us on doing this and this record. But we're probably not going to have anything out this year. We're trying to make this thing the best as possible that we can, and that's we're taking our time with it, like a slow cooked turkey. I don't know if that's the right analogy, but
as long as it's not dried out by the end.
But we're really taking our time with it is basically my point. So we've got about 15 or so ideas that we're kicking around and Ed's working on, and we're going to go out and tour towards the end of the year in Europe ourselves, and I think Ed's doing a little touring, and as is Soundgarden. So it's a very busy year in terms of other things going on.
Right.
So yeah, that's where we're at. We're just kind of doing a record right now. We're in the middle of it.
Well, I've heard the word experimental thrown out a little bit, and Pearl Jam, Pearl Jam stuff. That can mean some really cool things. Is that true?
A little bit. I think we leave ourselves open to whatever everyone's feeling around. I mean, to be as nebulous as possible. I mean, however we feel, as individuals. In whatever time period we're doing music is how the music comes out. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, that meaning there could be some more poppy stuff because if I'm listening to some more pop stuff, or there could be heavier stuff because Jeff is listening to some more heavy. It's kind of a combination of those things. I would say some is experimental, but some is pretty straightforward rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And some are some really beautiful ballads and stuff. So.
Did any of these, I know there was some talk right after Backspacer that you guys had written enough that you could potentially have made it a second record right after Backspacer. Did any of these songs come from those sessions?
These new ones from the Backspacer, we've listened to a few of those, yes. I'd say two or three are from that, but we have a slew of, as we all write in the band, mm-hmm. we all brought in, 10 songs, 5 songs a piece to the band, and so that's in addition to the two or three that were from Backspacer.
Yeah.
So we're always constantly trying to go move forward like a shark. You keep going as forward as possible. If things don't happen for whatever reason, sometimes the songs just don't make the record because they're not good enough for that record, but they may be good if you revisit them and listen to them again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there are a few of those, but then there's some that just won't do it. An early version of that was a song called Hard to Imagine that we tried to record over and over and over again, and I don't think we ever got the really great take of it. And that was an example of like trying to really record something over the period of a few records. Yeah. So I think you always want to be, at least in your mind as an artist, to be moving in a forward momentum. So hopefully we're doing that.
Is it going to be difficult to split Matt Cameron this year?
Oh, I think it'll be fine. Matt Cameron is so user friendly. I don't know if that's the right word. He's very much the most kind of quote unquote normal guy I've ever met in my life. And he's very, he's very focused on what he's doing, and when he's doing it, he does it 100%. So in terms of, he'll be with Soundgarden for their duration and as their record is coming out, which is phenomenal, by the way. I've heard 3 or 4 cuts from it. It's ridiculous how good it is. So when he's off of that, we have our tour booked in June. So Matt's going to have a busy year for
mm-hmm.
sure,
yeah.
But we'll make it, we're at a point in our career since it's after the 20th anniversary, we feel as a band, it's like, let's not really worry about too much other than trying to create some good music right now and doing some touring, but let's do it in a way where we feel very comfortable about it. And that means we all go do side things too.
Yeah.
Ed'll do his solo tour. Matt'll do a Soundgarden thing. So we'll figure it out. He'll figure it out for sure.
I like hearing the word Soundgarden and side project in the same.
Oh, right. I mean, Soundgarden certainly is
sure,
its own
right.
entity.
Right,
I don't mean to categorize them as a side project by any means.
No, not putting words in your mouth.
They're a formidable force of music. And an incredible band. So,
yeah. Last thing, actually, I noticed that one of the shows you're playing down in Florida is in your old hometown, isn't it?
Pensacola, Florida.
That's right.
Yeah. We're playing the DeLuna Festival in Pensacola, Florida, where the weekend of September 21st,
mm-hmm.
And we, that's where I was born. My dad was in survival ready to go to Vietnam. He was a pilot of F-4s, and he was stationed, and my family was in Pensacola, Florida, and that's why I was born there.
Yeah. Did you grow up there, or was it just kind of a born there type thing?
I was just born there, and my dad committed himself to two tours over there of duty, mm-hmm. and was we followed him. He was shot down over the Gulf of Tonkin and recovered in the burn clinic in Miramar, California. So we moved to Miramar, California, to San Diego when I was about probably 3 years old, mm-hmm. and or actually 2 years old. Then I stayed there from 2 to 5, and he got out of the service, and we moved to Seattle when I was 5.
Yeah, well, in the words of Bono, a sort of homecoming, just the same.
It is, yeah. I mean, I'm glad to be born. So I'm excited to go back there and say hello again. It's been a while. Yeah. We were there years ago. So.
And on that note, a belated happy birthday too. I know that happened.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, that's where we'll wrap this up. Mike McCready, thank you so much for taking this extended amount of time today.
And, no worries, Kyle. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mike McCready from my 2012 interview. We'll be right back with another one from 2013. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Mike McCready. Now, as I mentioned, the 2013 interview where we dig into Mad Season, and at that point, the just-released deluxe edition, and lots of other stuff as well. Part 2 of Kyle Meredith with Mike McCready.
Oh, hi, Kyle. It's Mike McCready.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well today. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to hear from you again. It was actually just about a year ago, last April, that you broke the news right here about Mad Season.
Oh, right.
And here we are again. So
I know. How about that? Yeah. Well, it's happening. Yeah. Now it's actually kind of we're actually putting something, a re-release out of all the stuff that was ever out there. So.
Yeah. And I'm glad it actually stayed on the timeline. I mean, it seems anytime we ask about any kind of records, like, oh, we'd like to have it out at this time. We'd like to do this. And it ends up being like a Christmas single.
Well,
you
never know when there's always the X factor of what can stop things and if things are done or, you never know when things are going to actually really come out. But
right.
I think this seems to be pretty much on the line right now.
Yeah, well done on that one. So what we're talking about here, Mad Season, coming up on the 20th anniversary very, very soon, a couple years shy of it. But you've gone back, you've dug into the archives, you made a deluxe edition out of it, and it's exciting, man.
Well, yeah, I think so. It's going to be, it's a mixture of sad and happy and a lot of different emotions that go into this because two of my buddies are dead from that, and they're no longer with us, and their music's still around. So I get to, I hear that and I feel sad, but I also feel happy that people enjoy that music and it meant something to some people. So we wanted to do a really good job and try to give a great example of what we were, Mad Season was like in a 6-month period, for the short amount that we were around. We did a few shows around Seattle and we filmed them and we recorded everything and did a couple, like a radio show, Monkey Wrench radio show to another, a John Lennon tribute song for a John Lennon tribute record. We did a lot within 6 months, so...
Yeah.
But that's pretty much everything that's on there. And then we have some new stuff with Mark Madigan singing on it. Yeah. So we're excited about that.
And let's talk about that part real quick. Going back in, finding those songs, and knowing that you were taking this thing that had become almost like legendary and steeped in lore and everything with, the backstory of Mad Season and how it all turned out. So how did you go about when you're saying, okay, we have these extra tracks that were never really completed, how did you go about like the really delicate process of having Mark Lanegan add new life into something that was steeped in that much lore?
Well, we did do a record, second record that with Baker and Barrett and I, about a year after the first Above record, and those guys never showed up, so we kind of just shelved it for years, and I felt like it would be, that music was never going to do anything and just kind of sit back there, and I was very proud of it, but it was also, it needs somebody to sing over it, and I felt like nothing would ever happen with it. Cut to 16, 17 years later, I'm just going through the Pearl Jam vaults, and I see this, a single... 2-inch tape of Mad Season live at the Crocodile Cafe, and I thought, wow, I forgot that we recorded that. And it was our It was our record release party for Above, and this is just a little backstory of how we're getting to all this. But so I called up Barrett, and we'd been talking for a little bit. We've been doing a little scoring on things, and had got in touch with each other about 2 years ago. After a long spell of not talking to each other, just because we were in different states and all sorts of different reasons. But at any rate, we've been working together for a little bit with Duff McKagan and myself, and we've been working on soundtrack stuff. And anyways, I talked to Barrett. And I said, "Hey, do you want to think about re-releasing this Mad Season stuff, and then maybe look at the, you know, that second record we never did anything with, and maybe try to find a singer for it, or try to do something with those songs." And what happened was he called up Mark Lanegan, and Lanegan picked three of the songs to sing over, and we were very happy about that, because I had kind of wanted, in my vision of that second record was certainly at first to have Lane sing on it, but when that's no longer an option, I was the only other guy I could ever think was Mark Lanegan. And so he did pick three of the songs, and one of them was called Slip Away. One of them was called Black Book of Fear, which Peter Buck basically wrote from R.E.M.
That's awesome.
Because he came in for one session when we were back in the day, and that was pretty cool. You'll hear his guitar on that. You totally know it's Peter Buck. And and then Locomotive, which is the quote-unquote single,
right,
I guess.
Right.
So those are the three that he picked, and he did them in, you know, about 4 months ago, and we got him back, and I was just ecstatic to actually have someone singing on them. So it's kind of putting a closure on that period, but it's also opening up something in terms of Barrett and myself and Duff McKagan. We reworked some of those songs and had some other ideas on top of that from that period of time, and we've been looking for different singers, and we finally found a guy, Jazz Coleman from Killing Joke, and he put two vocals over two of the tracks, and we're pretty stoked about that right now. And I'm not sure what we're going to call that, but I'm jumping ahead anyway.
Wow. Well, that's what you did last year at this time, so why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the stuff that would have become Disinformation. You guys did talk about calling it Disinformation there for a second.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so looking back on those, you know, here you are digging through these archives, as you say, which when you say that is exciting, by the way, because I wonder how much is actually in those vaults and archives of yours. But
there's a lot, for sure.
That's for another interview altogether, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But these were kind of dark days, personally. I mean, you had just come out of some of your darker drug days.
Yeah. I was drinking a lot, and I went to rehab, and my whole initial inclination was to get help get my friends sober, and however naive that was, it was truly naive, but the intention was good. You learn after a while to figure out in your alone life that each individual has to figure out that out for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely a darker time, but out of that came some really cool music, and I think that resonates with people that in terms of lyrics and where Lane was coming from at that time, and you know, it was very much music that couldn't have been done in Pearl Jam or Alice or Screaming Trees. Although it just didn't make sense, I think, in those venues, but in terms of Mad Season, it made sense. It was playing with Barrett. It allowed me to write kind of more Zeppelin-y type riffs, and it was an open field of let's get together and try to take care of each other and write music at the same time and let it just be what it is.
Yeah, with all that, could you actually feel and hear that going back through it?
I mean, I can feel the pain and all of that. Yeah, it's very hard to listen to that music for me. It's easier late now, but now that we're kind of doing something with it and it's back out there. But for many years, I couldn't listen to it. I felt like it just reminds me of Baker and you know, the funny stories he used to tell, and Lane, and so I've known Lane for many, many years, and we toured early on with Pearl Jam and Alice, and he was a good guy. So I just miss those. It's like when you have a friend and they're gone, and now there's the remnants of them is the music that's left, and luckily that's around. But you can't go, "Hey, that sounds good," or you can't joke about something. You miss the human element of someone passing, obviously.
Yeah.
But now it makes me realize this is what Lane was singing about. He was pretty prophetic, and he was struggling, and you could hear it in his lyrics. And my pain is self-chosen. Was definitely, you know, a line from River of Deceit, and also from the book The Prophet by Galil Gibran, and mm-hmm. that's what Lane had told me about that was from back in the day, and then, you know, it still resonates today.
Yeah.
You know, to me.
I like that you said, you know, you the whole naive thing about picking Lane because you were hoping it would help him out. There had to be a little bit of thought from there, though, that you're picking another one of the biggest singers in music at the time to be your lead singer, and that's going to put so much weight on that project, or was that on your mind at all?
No, I think that if anything, that would help it. You know, I just thought, in my mind at the time, it was, you know, he was a friend of mine. He was struggling. I wasn't looking at it from this perspective of us all being. I mean, I guess I kind of was. I mean, I had to. I was in mm-hmm. Pearl Jam, and Barrett was in the Trees, and mm-hmm. Lane was in Alice, and my friend Baker, who wasn't in any of those things, but he fit in right away in the Seattle scene. But I felt that. You know, I wanted to work with Lane because I had already worked with totally amazing singers yeah. in terms of Eddie and Cornell yeah. I was lucky enough to be able to work with Lane and Lanigan too yeah. on the same record. So
that's crazy.
You know, I feel very blessed that I've been able to be around those kind of guys.
I mean, you've been in a band with four of the five biggest Seattle bands of that time. You know, excluding Kurt Cobain, but you're the only one. You're the only one who's done that.
Yeah,
whole run.
It's funny. I at the MTV Music Awards, I jumped over the seats and I talked to Kurt and I said, "Hey, man, I heard you and Eddie are going to do something." If you want, I'll play some music guitar on it. I'm sure he was very irritated with me, but I was just trying to like extend an olive leaf at that time and to say like, so it could have happened, you know. You never, one other thing could have happened, but unfortunately that didn't either. So.
Yeah, what could have been?
Yeah,
this was during the time so Pearl Jam would have been doing Vitalogy around this time, right?
I think it was right after Vitalogy. We were going into right after Vitalogy, right into Yield.
No code.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
Well, what I'm getting to here is remembering a little bit of my PJ history, this would have been the time where it seemed like Ed was probably writing more, and here you are in something else doing all of this great stuff with Mad Season.
I think that, you know, we all kind of look at each other as band members of this band, but we also do other things. So, mm-hmm. you know, Stone was doing Brad back then. Jeff has done his project Random, and mm-hmm. he's done three mm-hmm. other bands, and Ed's done his solo thing, but he's done movie stuff, and I've done some TV and movie stuff. I did a movie called Fat Kid Rules the World mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. by Matthew Lillard. So, and Matt has done Soundgarden. So we all kind of do other stuff, and then we bring it back to the band.
Sure.
What Mad Season brought to me was... after the Vitalogy, which certainly had a lot of Ed songs on it, and I felt like, you know, I wasn't contributing anything on that record at all. I wasn't up to it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. after Mad Season, I kind of got the confidence to write songs again. And out of that, I mean, fully got confidence to write songs again. And so, or to write songs in general, because I felt like I was writing with all these really prolific writers like Ed and Stone and Jeff, and I felt like I didn't measure up maybe back in the early days. I was and after Mad Season, I felt like I can do this, yeah. and I did. I wrote Given to Fly and Faithful, and I forget one other on that record, on Yield too. But it gave me the confidence to do that, and I've had that kind of ever since. So I'm very grateful to Mad Season as a project because of that. So, no, we were blowing up very huge back then at that mm-hmm. time, so there was a lot of stuff going on around the Vitalogy area. We'd already blown up very huge, and we were trying to figure out what to do after that and how to keep our band together and how to tour correctly, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on around our third and fourth records.
Right. Is there any plans to play any of this with Mark at this point?
Oh, gosh, I hope so.
Yeah.
Mark Lanigan, if you want to play any shows... I'm there, so I'm gonna put that out there right now. It's up to him, you know. I think Barrett and I have discussed like wanting to do some stuff, and we would love to bring Duff McKagan in on it. Mm-hmm. And I think he's ready to go, but it's kind of up to if Mark's schedule allows it, and he's into doing it. We'll pursue that sure.
That man is a busy, busy man.
Yeah, he is. He's doing a lot of solo stuff these days. So,
well, with only one album, you know, it's probably hard to ask this question. But what do you see Mad Season's legacy at this point? You know,
yeah, that's a good question. I've never thought about the terms legacy in terms of Mad Season, but I guess It's a brief snippet of time of music in Seattle in the mid 90s of a group of guys that got together for the purpose of trying to help each other and trying to get sober and clean and initially naively maybe too, but at least the intention was there and the heart was there, and out of that we just created some cool music, and that music was captured quickly, and we played a limited amount of shows, but we also did two videos, and we shot a long-form video at that time, and we really did a lot of work within 6 months, you know, I keep saying that time window, but it might have been a little bit longer than that, to kind of promote it and do the best that we could in terms of us being on the off the road, Pearl Jam, Screaming Trees, and Alice in Chains all kind of having little breaks, and we filled in that little vacuum with this record, Mad Season Above, which I think stands alone on its own in terms of all those bands, and it's a tribute to Lane and Baker and their kind of their legacy, you know, and the legacy of the music that was left behind by two guys that aren't around anymore. And I just hope people enjoy it. You know, that's all I can do, and hope people get a feeling out of it.
I don't think that'll be a problem. That album sets such a mood, and even today, nearly 20 years later, it is still such a beautiful record, even in a very dark way. But
yeah. It's a mixture of mixture of tragedy and triumph. Mm-hmm. And out of that, you know, hopefully comes answers and comes, you know, some sort of relief for people if they want to hear, if they want to escape with music. And if Mad Season does that with, you know, Long Gone Day or We're All Alone at the End, which is one of my favorite tracks on there, or River Deceit, if those things resonate still after almost 20 years, then I think we did our job.
Yeah, well done. Well, thank you, Mr. McCready.
Thank you.
For joining me once again, and we'll catch later on in the year, hopefully.
Yeah, let's talk again.
And there it is, two interviews with Mike. Pearl Jam's new record, Dark Matter, is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode, the special Rewind edition of Kyle Meredith With. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up to date with all the interviews that we put out. Three brand new ones every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And then after that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There's bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Graham Parsons and Emmylou Harris, Tori Amos, Iron and Wine, Fiona Apple, Weezer, Violent Femmes, Regina Spektor, Paul Weller, Sonic Youth, The Cramps, The Smashing Pumpkins, Xanfermine, Phosphorescent, XTC, De La Soul, Lake Street Dive, Ani DeFranco, Iggy Pop, The Clash, White Reaper, and my interview with Joe Keery of Stranger Things and Fargo fame, also his music project, Joe. Just an example of what you get every weeknight, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune into the Capital Ideas Podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience by listening to the Capital Ideas Podcast today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.